Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy Wallace, and I host this show. And today, I have a great guest on. We're going to talk about a lot of things, and hopefully everybody will get to know her. So, Jacqueline, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy, for having me. I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be fun.
Oh, it's going to be a lot of fun. So, Jacqueline, let's start off by you at least telling our listeners a little bit more about you, and we'll talk a little bit about your book, and then I'll ask you a bunch of the questions, okay?
Okay. All right, let's just dive right in then. My book, The Thief of Sacred, I began in 1991 as a result of the first Gulf War, because as I was watching that unfold, I started to have the distinct impression that there was a lot more going on than the media would, you know, talk about. And so I set out on a mission to find out exactly what that was, and I interviewed a ton of people. I did a ton of research, declassified documents, interviewing people in the military and government officials. And the plot that unfolded was a terrorist attack in the United States. And so I faithfully wrote down everything that was given to me, both in the physical and in the non-physical, and I created a thriller because I thought that would be a nice vehicle, a way to get the information out without, you know, making it entertaining at the same time. And then it was on an editor's desk on 9/11, and it was so close to what actually occurred that they cut off all contact with me. They wouldn't have anything to do with me, wouldn't return my phone calls, no emails, nothing. So I kind of went underground for a couple of years. And then 2 years ago, I decided it was time for the information to come out, and so I self-published, and that's my book.
Great. The thing is, a lot of people, and I have to agree with you totally, Jacqueline, I really do not believe, number one, our government or the media really tells us the truth about anything, to be honest with you. And I have a very difficult problem with that because I myself get to see visions. And as a child, I saw all this stuff happening when I was six. I scared the living bejeebies out of me. Didn't know what it meant at the time. And as the years went on and 9/11 occurred, that was the start of my recognizing what is going to be happening with the future stuff to come. And every time I listen to the news, which is very rare, I just want to put my foot through the television, okay? Because I sit here and I go, what is wrong with the American people that they have their heads buried so deep in the sand that the only thing shown is their butt? And I cannot believe that the American people are afraid or constantly live in fear that they won't do something about what's really going on here.
Well, I'd have to agree with you. I try to reassure myself by seeking out positive examples of people making the changes. And, you know, I look at the current running for president, and I hope that this is a new level of involvement that we're starting to see and a new level of attention being paid by the American people. And I hope that it doesn't just end, you know, in November when the race is decided. I hope it's the start of a new shift, but we'll just have to wait and see. I think it's interesting that you said you started seeing stuff when you were 6 years old. It's my understanding that six-year-olds have this accelerated period of time where their consciousness expands in leaps and bounds, 6 and 16 for Western culture and 4 and 14 for Eastern culture. Have you found that at all to be true?
Oh, very much so. Like a lot of the kids that are here now simply amaze me. You know, they know so much, and yet they can't really do a lot of talking about it because most people, as advanced as we're trying to be, still don't quite get it. You know, so they label these kids with ADD, ADHD, and all these other weird things. It really is not true. And I know that you've done some studies on that, too. And I have a 501c that's going to be a 501c3 called Child's Miracle Mind. And it's really using all the metaphysical techniques of ancient knowledge and wisdom to help get these kids off those prescription drugs or not ever be putting on them by using the different techniques.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then it will be turned into another leg called the School of Now, which is a whole new system for these kids that are here to learn, and the school will never be outdated like our system is now.
Wow, that's terrific. If there's any way I can support you in that, please let me know, because
that
is part of what I do, too. The kids are amazing. They are truly gifted, and I get really sad when I see how angry they are, and I totally understand why they're angry.
Mm-hmm.
It's not you know, it's justified, and we need to support them, and we as a society, we need to change. So if you have ideas on exactly, you know, what needs to happen and how our educational system can shift to support these kids rather than suppress them, I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, I have many, many ideas. Actually, I've been working on it for probably about 5 years now, and I really started working on it because my granddaughter, who is 8 years old going on 30, has always been like that, and so she gives everybody a really hard time, you know, including myself, and sometimes she's really hard to deal with, and I can understand why some parents go, oh, I can't deal with this, I got to put them on something, but you know what? There are many other techniques, and as soon as I get it all together so I know that nobody's going to try to steal it or, you know, try to, you know, rip it all apart before I even get it started, then there will be big announcements all over the place about what's going on, because to me, this is the only way it's really going to help the kids, because we're not, I mean, I shouldn't say we're not. A lot of people are not listening to what these kids need. They just, you know, stick them in classrooms and they expect them to sit there for an hour at a time and learn everything, and they're not going to. You know, they have their minds on a lot of other things. And so that's what I have found. You know, so I, like I said, I've been working on it for a while now, I've got it just about where it's done. In fact, the website for it will be really out pretty soon. I just wanted to get it finished before I really put it out there so the public can see it.
Yeah, that's exciting.
It is important. Now, you also did some studies with kids, and especially the indigos. But there's more than just indigos, but we'll work with indigos for right now.
Actually, I prefer the term children of the 21st century.
I do, too.
Because that seems more accurate to me. But for the mainstream to attach a label to it, like indigo, people understand that it's been enough in mainstream consciousness that people know what that means. So, but personally, I prefer children of the 21st century.
Yeah, and I call them the children of now.
Oh, perfect. See?
Just like the school being named, you know. But can you maybe explain a little bit to the listeners about why you have the studies that you have done with the children, and you've also done a lot of others now. You did with the government with some, but you also do animal rescue, and you also help a lot of people. So let's talk a little bit about those things, and then we'll really get into with the kids and all of that stuff, and we'll talk a little bit more about your book, too.
Okay. Let's see. Now I lost track. Where are we starting? Okay. I have a 6-year-old daughter who is, of course, 6 going on 30, and that's how I got involved in the whole children of the 21st century enigma and how their reality is clashing with society and why. And I've had teachers throughout my life who've often spoke of prophecies that related to this time period and how children would be coming in to assist with that change, and how the sheer numbers of them and the specific way that they're wired, so to speak, would be a catalyst for the change. So that's the part that's exciting to me. And I got into animal rescue for obvious reasons. I love animals. And my grandmother started an animal shelter in San Diego 50 years ago before that was even common. So I think that's genetic, pretty much. And natural disasters, I work a lot with people in terms of natural disaster relief and recovery. I went through, 4 years ago, I went through a wildfire. It was actually the biggest fire in California's history. And the experience that I had during that 3-day period really changed my life because this was 4 years ago, so I was still in hiding with my book, and I still felt that the information was too inflammatory to get out. I didn't want to be a target, and I was afraid of my own power, and I was afraid of speaking my truth. And during that fire, we couldn't see where we were. We had left, we'd fled our house, and so we were down at my mother-in-law's, and it was in the bottom of a canyon, and we couldn't see anything. So I started to get a little nervous, and it was sort of a gut feeling, so I called 911, and I asked them, you know, I said, we can't see anything. Where is the fire? Are we safe here? And she looked at the address, and she said, oh, yeah, you're fine. You know, stay put. Don't go anywhere. You're fine. So I thought, all right. So I went outside, and I had this moment of complete stillness and clarity. And in that moment, I just knew we had to get out of there. I knew. I just knew. Mm-hmm. So I went back inside, and I told everybody who had gathered there, listen, we're in danger. We got to get out of here. And half the people said, oh, you're just being paranoid. And I said, no, I mean it. And the force of my clarity was conveyed to them, and so we all left, and about an hour later, the house had burned to the ground, and it moved, the fire moved at 60 miles an hour, so, you know, you had to be, you had to be in that knowingness, or it was death. So I decided that it was time for me to come out and start speaking to people about how critical right now it is to be able to get in touch with that knowingness. And Nancy, it sounds like that's something that you do naturally,
or
is that something that you've actually worked at?
No, actually it came very natural. In fact, I wrote my own autobiography and self-published it called Raised by Angels, because that to me is how I was raised, you know, with the knowing and the wisdom and all of the knowledge that came from them, excuse me, is how I really got all my stuff together. You know, I mean, my parents were great. It's not that my parents weren't great. They were. But they didn't give me what I know. And they've helped me many, many times with, you know, my own instinct and my own intuition and just the voices that I get to hear that have saved my life a few times. You know, so I tell everybody, you listen to those voices. Don't ever let people say that you're paranoid, you're weird, you're strange, you're crazy. Those voices are there for your guides, and they're there to help you. So mine came very natural. In fact, I was protected the entire time. So I also didn't grow up, you know, having to fight for my belief of what I was doing. They actually wouldn't let me tell anybody anything until I almost, you know, we were going to be in a very serious car accident where everybody would have died, and then they let me open up and say it all, you know. So, but I was very much protected. But a lot of people are not. And a lot of people, I think, Jacqueline, are very afraid of, you know, telling people what they know because of that thought that they might be, you know, weird or strange, or somebody may think that they're just, you know, crazy. You know, and I think people have to get above that fear, and they have to get over that fear, just like you did when you saved everybody.
Yeah, it's definitely time now for people to start really looking at that and acting on their heart, because I believe that 2012 is going to be a turning point on the planet, and the preparation for that turning point is for each of us to dismantle our belief systems, the ideas and beliefs that we've inherited from family, from society, from the government, from culture, and see what applies to us. What do we hold as truth? What in those systems is real? And often we find that they are contrary to the heart and that they deny knowingness. And that's what is changing right now. And I think it's really important for people to embrace their heart and embrace their knowingness and act on it, because, as I said, this is a critical time of change, and the more people are able and willing to do that, the safer they're going to be. And the other part of that is that I believe each one of us has a key to this transformation, and the key lies in the heart. And if we are able to be aware of what our key is, what our mission is, our role in this change of society, the more people who do what their hearts bring them to do, the better and the easier all this transformation is going to take.
And I agree wholeheartedly with that. You know, again, a lot of people, they've lived in fear for so long. And 9/11, you know, really, I think, woke up some people, but it didn't wake them up the way they needed to be awakened. It made them know that we're not this almighty strong power that nobody can touch anymore. But then it put them into the state of fear because of all the wonderful things that our government and everybody else did. But, you know, so people, I really believe, have not gotten over that. So I think some of them are afraid to believe that anything is really going to happen that's going to be good. Because if you look around the world today, there's not really a whole bunch of stuff that people go, oh, yeah, that's really great. But there is, except the media doesn't let you know the good stuff. They only gave you the bad stuff. And people get up every morning, turn on their televisions, turn on the radios to hear the news of what happened the night before. That was horrible. You know, this person was shot, that person was shot, a train derails, 300 people are killed, a cyclone hits and 100,000 people die. It's almost like they live for the bad instead of waking up and telling themselves, this is going to be a great day.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of it is just, like you said, the way we've kind of been raised and, you know, what we've been shown that we're supposed to believe. So I do have a hard time with a lot of the belief systems.
Well, and that's a benefit to you, absolutely. For those of us who are still tracking down our belief systems, I discovered a really wonderful tool the other day. I realized that triggers, emotional triggers, when somebody says something and you react in a really big way with whatever emotion, anger or justification or resentment or something, if you follow the trigger, you will find a belief system, because knowingness has no triggers. So I've been very eagerly hoping people will trigger me so that I can uncover another belief system, because some of them are really quite buried and quite sneaky in a lot of ways, around, you know, marriage and children and society and partnerships and even following your heart. You know, this is not something that society supports, and to be able to do that is truly being the expression of the divine that we all are.
Yeah, and see, again, I think people need to realize that they are the divine, instead of letting whoever is controlling their mindset continue to control it. And
yeah,
there are more people waking up. But, you know, unfortunately, I really think it's going to take some of the disasters that are happening now and will continue to happen for people to really completely open up.
I have to agree with you. And it is hard for people like you and me to accept that, I think, in some ways, too, because it seems easy for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some of your listeners, I'm sure, can relate to this. It's just do it. Just accept it. You just, you know, live your heart. It's easy. I mean, really, it's easier to be in your knowingness than it is to support a belief system. It's certainly a lot less painful. And the thing that concerns me as well is the fact that within, I would say, a year or so, the focus is not going to be on natural disasters as earthquakes and floods and tornadoes and that. It's actually going to be the viruses that emerge.
Mm-hmm.
All over the planet that will catch people's attention in a really big way. And the idea of a pandemic and quarantines and vaccines, short supply, if you think about the disruption to society that would occur if that happens, that's a really sobering thing, and I think that's when people are really going to be tested.
Yeah, and it's going to happen. I mean, some of my visions, you know, told me 2010 is when a lot of things are going to start happening. And 2012 will be, you know, bigger and more. But it really starts around 2010, and some of it's already starting to happen. I mean, we're having earthquakes in areas where we've never had earthquakes before.
Right.
Okay? Which should be telling the people something, that there's some changes going on. You know, the earth is tired of us doing what we've done to it, which is killing it, and it's fighting back.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. And just, you know, just the changes in general. People have a very hard time really believing, you know, anything, and especially believe in themselves. And it's that belief in yourself that's going to get you to survive. And that's the part that, you know, worries me, because most people, you know, they don't quite get it yet. You know, that they have the ability, they have the power, they have the knowledge, they have the wisdom, they have the insight. Just listen to it. Don't question it. Don't try to piece it together with logic, because it won't fit with logic.
Yep. Yeah, well, I feel exactly the same way, Nancy, and that's part of the reason I do what I do, and I go on interviews and I tell my experience during the fire and how it saved, you know, me and my family and these other people as well. And the best we can do is just keep putting it out there and knowing that those who have ears will hear, you know, that'll sing.
When you decided to write your book, now we talked just a little bit about it, and I really want to talk about it a little bit more, okay? Because what you found, I'm sure, for you to go into hiding was a big shock to your system. And I'm sure that if a lot of people would know what you know, it would probably shock them too. So when you were writing the book, can you kind of give us like a little insight about how you felt while you were writing it?
Well, the actual process was really more of a connecting the dots process. I really felt that I was guided where to go, who to interview, what to read, where to find what to read. It was really a beautiful experience, because I felt very connected and very guided, and as you said too, very, very protected in this process. And it was amazing how the pieces came together. And often I would be writing a chapter and what came next would surprise me. You know, I was like, oh, no way, that happens? Oh, my goodness. You know, I mean, it sounds kind of silly, but I did not have a plan from A to Z how this book was going to unfold. I knew certain big events like the terrorist attack and certain key players in it, but I did not know the full story until I actually wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a really special time in my life, and I look back on that with an honoring to those in the non-physical that helped me and those in the physical who helped me even though they didn't even realize they were helping me. So it really is an expression of love for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And the message is pretty sobering, honestly. It is. And that's why I went into hiding, because during the patriotic fever that happened after 9/11 and how anybody who didn't support the war was heretic, and you know, I didn't support the war because I knew that we were going at it for wrong reasons. I knew that Hussein wasn't involved with Al-Qaeda, and I knew we didn't have weapons of mass destruction, and it was all a big lie, just like the first Gulf War, where they had the nurse saying that she saw Hussein's soldiers ripping babies out of incubators and throwing them on the floor. Well, it turns out that nurse who testified in front of Congress wasn't even there at the time, and she was in England, and she was a member of the Kuwaiti royal family. So she was coached to tell the story, and actually that story that she told in front of Congress tipped the vote in favor of going to war. So all these pieces do fit together. Sometimes it just takes a little time and a little bit of perspective to see the big picture. But unfortunately, this is all part of a bigger plan, and we're starting to see, and I think you're right, I think 2010 is really going to be when it really starts to manifest. But we're going to see the power structures being in fear of losing their power, and so they're going to start clamping down. And what each of us does with that is going to determine our own reality, because it's like tuning a radio station. If you tune it just right, then the bad stuff will kind of just float past you. It won't stick because you're focused on what's true instead of the illusion. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Makes a lot of sense to me. But there are many things that make probably a lot of sense to me where other people are going to go, do you really believe that? It's like, yeah.
Yeah, I run into that too, and I run into interview hosts who just want to argue, and that's fine too. You know, I mean, it sharpens my intellect. It's absolutely fine, and I figure whatever message we do get out is perfect because everything serves regardless of how it looks. You know?
Oh, it does. Now, can you give the name of your book again, and then after you do that, let our listeners know where they can get your book from, and then also give out your website.
Oh, thank you. It's called The Thief of Sacred, and it's available on Amazon because I had to self-publish it. And my website is thethiefofsacred.com, and it's just about me and my process. And the real juicy stuff is in the book. So those of you who are interested in really hearing the truth of what I discovered, that really did, you know, surprise me as well as the people in New York, you have to read the book.
Yeah, I think if people see it and read it, they would probably understand it better than just somebody talking about it, because we as people are very visual, and we only really listen to probably 10% of what's told to us. You know, so I think that they really should go out, get the book, and, you know, kind of make their own judgment on, you know, what information you put down.
No, yeah, that's of course the key. I mean, don't take anything I say for granted, you know. I mean, I encourage everybody to weigh information against their heart, because that's really our own inner barometer, and it's just such an important thing. So what do you find, can we talk about the children now?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, excellent. What do you find that the drugs do for them? Because when I walk into a classroom, for example, because I do work with children, when I walk into a classroom, I can usually pick out the ones who have been put on these Ritalin and all these other drugs, because they seem almost vacant to me in some way, and I don't know if it's an energetic thing I'm picking up on or whether it's, you know, but they seem like the core of them has been shut down and walled off. So what's your experience with that?
But see, it has. The core of them have been shut down and walled off. And see, it baffles me, and I'll tell you the biggest thing that baffles me the most is why a child whose mind is just developing, and they're going to go through their phases, because everybody goes through their phases. If you don't go through your phases, you don't learn, okay? But why would they want to take a mind that is just starting to develop and shut it down, okay? I have the hardest time with that. And by trade, I was once a licensed practical nurse. And I quit because I had a hard time with the medical profession, because I didn't like what I saw
to begin with. It's almost barbaric sometimes, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And when I was in school, it's really funny, when I was in my nurse's training, at least once or twice a week, I was at the dean's office because I was always in trouble. Okay, because I didn't agree with what they were, you know, telling me I was supposed to do or not do, and I wouldn't do what the doctors wanted me to do that I hadn't been shown how to do, even though inside I knew how to do it, I wouldn't do it. So a few of the doctors got, like, really mad at me, and they go, you're supposed to listen, and I would just stand up and say, hey, you know, until I am checked off in my class for knowing how to do that, I'm not doing it. So they would take me down to the dean's. Huh. And I was a straight-A student, and I never opened a book, okay? So it's kind of like I already knew this stuff. And they kept threatening to throw me out of school. And my comment was, go ahead, I'll find a different way to help people.
Excellent.
You know, so I wouldn't back down. So I made a lot of the people mad, but I didn't care, okay? So when I saw what was going on with adults at that time, it hits a spot with me now when I see what's going on with children now. Because a lot of these children really don't have this unfocused problem. Most of these children are actually multitasking, and they can't do it if they're being shut down. And they're being shut down for convenience sake more than anything else. And I have a problem with that. Kids need to be kids. They need to be outside. They need to play. They need to be able to exercise. They need to have some fun. And they don't get it. And when they're on the medicine, it's like you said, they're vacant. It's like their body is there, but it's not connected to anything.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time watching kids who should be laughing, having a good time, and, yeah, sometimes disruptive because they're kids, you know, being basically shut down and that taken away from them.
I agree. It is really, really difficult to watch that. And so what I try to do is I try to connect with the parents to kind of see if I can support them in understanding that their kids are not bad kids. I've discovered there's some commonality in the parents. They're usually depressed themselves,
mm-hmm.
And they are often being medicated as well for different emotional and psychological issues.
Right.
And they are shamed into thinking that there's something wrong with their kids. Their kids are bad. They're disruptive. And you know, they take that on as truth. And then someone offers them the solution. Here, all the kid has to do is take this pill. Well, I'm on pills. So, hey, if it helps, you know, great, let's do it. And often the rationale is that it's going to help them perform better in school. But I don't know. Have you ever seen that show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Yeah.
You know, I sit there, my husband watches it, and I think, well, no wonder these kids are bored. This information that they're being, you know, tested and having to regurgitate is absolutely worthless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, they're bored. I call ADHD boredom. I mean,
I
let's give
too.
Them something they want to learn. Like
right.
you said, get them outside in nature and let them learn that way and let them play and let them discover the world the way they're meant to,
mm-hmm.
Not in little rows in desks and on drugs.
No. See, so part of the stuff that we're going to be doing with the Child's Miracle Mind is using a lot of the metaphysical techniques. I truly
believe.
Can you
talk about that a little?
A little bit.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
But I will, just a little bit. Because I want people to know about it, because to me it's very, very important. And these kids are very important. They are the ones who are going to put this world back together. And if
right.
they are all drugged, they can't do it.
Right.
Okay? So using, like, astrology, numerology, intuitive readings on each child and each child's family, and connecting all the dots, and then making sure that those children are all put into a compatible setting with compatible children like them. Because the schools of today that are here, they just throw 30, 40 kids in a group. Nobody really gets the attention that they need. Nobody gets to have the true individual teaching that they need. And they're usually put in classrooms where they don't get along with each other. So you put down that they're bored. They don't really care what's going on in class. They don't pay attention. They give the teacher a hard time, and they don't get along with their students. Those five things right there makes a child not want to go to school or not learn. And so using some of the metaphysical techniques of finding out who this child really is, what their soul really is here for, those to me are the best ways to help these kids find out who they are, so they can be proud of themselves and be all they can be, rather than being told that they're bad or they can't focus or they don't pay attention, and because of that, they have to be on these drugs. Now, they haven't studied these drugs long enough to know what long-term effect it is going to have on these kids. And that bothers me.
Yeah, that's it. You know, the idea that you just outlined, it sounds wonderful. And part of the reason it sounds so wonderful is because it's so simple. And the real truth and what I've discovered is the stuff that's really true is really simple.
It's very
and obvious
simple.
In a lot of ways, too. I mean, it's a very elegant system that you've just described, being able to support the children in their uniqueness and find them at the correct environment to support that expression. I think that's fantastic.
It's very important. I mean, these kids are very, very smart. They are so much smarter than we are, you know, by a long shot. And yet they're put down, their energy level has to be put down to match ours. Because we haven't done, most of us haven't done what we needed to do to get our energy level up to the frequency it should be. Now, these kids are coming here with high, high frequency. And in order to blend, they have to bring it down, and they can't. They can't. So that's why they have the outburst. That's why they're bored. That's also why there are so many kids killing kids today. They are bored. A lot of those kids that have been, you know, planning on blowing up schools and all that, they have been on some form of medication before, and they're not really telling the public that.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. But then there'll be a little feedback a little bit later that says, well, you know, you got to make sure that your child doesn't get too depressed when they're taking the Ritalin. That's a side effect now and a warning. Well, hey, if that's a side effect and a warning, and they've been using these pills for that long, why aren't they telling the parents that to begin with?
Yeah.
I will tell you why. The drug companies like selling their drugs. They like making the money that they make, and they don't really care a lot of the time what the outcome is.
Yeah, and oddly enough, I've been recently led to the understanding that the companies that manufacture those mood-altering drugs also manufacture the preservatives that are commonly used in our food.
Mm-hmm.
And the children that are coming in are so sensitive to everything, emotionally, physically, mentally sensitive, and, as you pointed out, a higher vibration, that the preservatives that we find in pretty much everything that mm-hmm. is in the grocery store is causing this sensitivity to turn into this expression of rebellion and, you know, all the things that we call negative expressions, you know, all the things that they're being criticized for. A lot of them are caused or enhanced by these preservatives. So the drug companies, hey, for them it's win-win. They sell the preservatives that cause the moods, that, and then they sell the drugs to control the moods.
Oh, yeah, it's one big vicious cycle. And that's actually what I'm also going to do, and this is the first time I'm announcing it. And the only reason why I'm announcing it is because of what we're talking about. I am putting together a documentary on the treatment of ADD, ADHD for the baby boomers versus what they do now.
Wow.
Okay. And I'll be talking to a lot of doctors, a lot of nutritionists, you know, a lot of people. I mean, on my website, if you go on to my regular website, which is nancypsychicresources.com, the one you went on,
mm-hmm.
if you click on Child's Miracle Mind and then you click on ADD, ADHD, the first thing that comes up is a question that says, would you like to have your name on this list? And it lists probably 200 people way back in time, Mozart, Van Gogh, all of those people, all the way up through to now some of the big head movie stars, producers, who have really been labeled with ADD, ADHD, or would have been if they gave labels back in that time.
Yeah.
And almost every single person that's on that list is very, very creative. They are creative geniuses. And because of that, they are out there, you know, they're out there. And again, the people are trying to control that outness, that creativity. And it's that creativity that sets everybody apart, and it's that creativity that's going to also bring everybody together.
Right.
But they're trying to eliminate it.
Right.
You know, and you're right when it comes to the preservatives. I mean, the things that the kids eat today are really, really bad. They're totally, totally having their bodies poisoned.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's convenience sake. Everything's convenient. And as long as it's convenient, then it makes it okay.
Yeah, and the thing that concerns me about that mentality as well is it provides a vehicle for negative forces to insert more methods of control, because
mm-hmm.
if it's convenient, then it's more readily swallowed.
Right.
And one very possible outgrowth of that, of course, is the microchipping
mm-hmm.
RFID. When people have babies, they say to them, well, actually, it's a test program now, I believe, but
yes.
it will come soon, where they say, if your child is ever kidnapped or if your child is ever lost, if they have this chip in their body, we will be able to find them again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way to get in. And the convenience factor, the chips as well, they microchip all the products in the store. I think Walmart is already doing
yep,
that.
Yeah, they're already doing it.
Yeah, and pretty soon we're going to have the opportunity to be implanted with a chip that is a direct link to our bank account. So all we do is we load up our grocery cart with these products, and then we just walk out with them, and the scanners automatically detect our name, number, rank, serial number, social, and bank accounts, and just deduct the cost of those goods from this account, and it all happens like magic.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the problem with that is that if you are deemed undesirable in society, by some authority figure, then they can cut you off completely. And that's just sort of where I could see this all going. Have you had any thoughts about that?
Oh yeah, it's come up to me several times. Like I don't really do online banking because, first of all, I don't like the whole computer system. I know everybody is all hyped and they think this is great and it's wonderful and you can get all this information, but you have no idea what information is out there on each person.
Mm-hmm.
And all that is just adding to it. And yeah, you're right. They're going to be trying to eliminate the unsavior ones, the ones that are like me, the ones who won't accept what they're trying to force us into doing. Or the ones who say, this isn't right. And they are going to try to do that. I mean, our government, from what I understand, is actually trying to eliminate the middle class. So they have an upper class and a lower class, and there's nothing in between. And they've almost done it with what they're doing with the economy today. So nothing surprises me, when I hear stuff like this. And I hear a lot of stuff. And, my own guys will say, hey, Nancy, we got something for you, And it's fun to listen to them sometimes, and it's like, you've got to be kidding me.
Do you have a way to disseminate that information? Is that on your website? Do you give up updates or mailing list? Or
I haven't done it yet because I was trying to get everything else so done, And so that will happen, but I'm actually going to get the child stuff done first because that is just so, so important.
And timely. Excellent.
Yes.
Good.
Okay. And then the rest can, because it's almost like trying to reach the people who are so programmed, they don't want to be deprogrammed. Okay? They don't want to be.
Right.
Because if they get deprogrammed, that means they have to take responsibility now for making changes. And
yep.
they don't want to do that. Because now they don't have to take the responsibility and they don't have to be blamed for anything. They can just sit back and say, I didn't do it.
Right.
See, and so I'm not like that. In fact, I wrote another book that I'm going to put onto my website when I just finished the very last part of it. But the name of the book is called The What Do You Think Book, Pencil with an Eraser Included, Batteries Not. Okay? And all this book is questions, quotes, and jokes about every facet of life today.
Wow, that sounds really interesting.
Oh, it's really good. I mean, I didn't leave out anybody. I actually picked on everybody. Okay, so I wasn't being prejudiced with any one particular unit here, so I used all of it. Talks about the government, talks about religion, talks about the pharmaceutical companies, talks about veterans, talks about the media. I mean, schools. There's like eight different lists of things that the questions are all about. And one of the questions in the government one, and I ask it, and I ask other people many times, I say to them, do you think the American people are like lambs being led to a slaughterhouse? And then there's just lines. You answer however you want to answer it.
Hmm.
You know, and it comes with an eraser because you may change your mind at any time. And if you do, you go back and erase it and do it again. Okay? And then the quotes are really good quotes because they fit each chapter pretty well. And then the jokes, they're hysterical. And I don't make a lot of comments of what I think because I really want people to stop and think about what they are allowing everything to turn into.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay? And if people sat there and did this, they'd be going, what is wrong with me? You know, so that one's going to be coming out. I haven't got it quite done yet now, but you're also coming out with a second book.
I'm working on the research angle of it right now, and it has to do with natural disasters because the pattern of climate change and natural disasters is definitely part of the bigger picture as we wrap up to 2012. There's no question about that. Is there some ticket that you have for bringing people to the point where they want to get deprogrammed, or do you have some method of reaching the people who prefer to be in the old safe ways, quote unquote?
Here's what happens when people come to me for readings, and I do tons of them. Okay, so when people come to me for readings, I usually know where that person's at in their mind and in their body and in their soul. It's kind of weird because I get to feel everything that they're feeling. So, like, I will have tears that start forming in my eyes, but they're not my tears. They're those person's tears. And most of the people are really afraid to let go of past hurts, pains, angers, and guilt because that's what they know. And so that's where they stay stuck. So there's a thing that I have them do, and it's also on my website. It's called the Let Go Letter. And what it is about is actually writing a letter to yourself about all of the hurts, the pains, the angers, and the guilt that you have from as far back as you can remember to the very, very first time, all the way through to present day, that day. And it's done all at one time with no stopping, no interference of any kind, and it's just total, total truth because nobody sees it but the person writing it. I've been using it for 28 years, and when people do it, the results are amazing because when I do a reading for somebody, and I tell them to do this letter, it may take them a year, 2 years, 5 years to call me back. And the weirdest thing is when they call me back, if they haven't done that letter, their reading is almost identical. And it's weird because I remember telling them. Okay? It's like an instant click back into my memory bank here. And it's like, didn't I tell you this last time I read you? You know, and they kind of look at me like, yeah. And I go, please. All I'm asking you to do is just do it one time. One time at least just to let go of all this stuff so you can really make the changes for yourself that you need to make so you can finally be happy and you can be who you really are rather than what you have allowed yourself to stay as.
So what you've designed then is a really wonderful vehicle for growth. It sounds like if people do it and they do it with the proper intent to really let go. You know, sometimes I can see how somebody might do it with the intent of just, you know, reemphasizing the pain and mm-hmm. reaffirming the victim mentality. But I think if someone were to really do it in the way that you're describing it, it would be just like a quantum leap forward in growth. And really, I think what you're doing is asking people to identify their belief systems about things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically it's true. But especially to identify truly who they are.
Right.
Because they have built their life and their world all on that stuff that hurts, the pains, the angers, and the guilt that they have been raised to be in and allow themselves to stay in.
Right.
And so the technique is hard, believe me. This is one of the hardest things people would do in their whole life, but the end result is fantastic. When that person does the letter, because I always tell somebody, if I tell them how to do this letter, I tell them, please do not call me back until you have done it. Because if you call me back and you haven't done it, you're going to waste your money because the reading is going to be almost identical, if not identical. And I said, and I'm going to remember. So please, don't do that. You know? And so the ones that do it, and most of them do it, okay, they will call me up and they go, man, Nancy, this was one of the hardest things, but, you know, I learned so much about myself. And now I know who I am, and I know what I have to do now to get myself going and keep myself going. And that, in itself, to me, is what it's for.
That is amazing.
Okay. And again, it isn't easy. It is. This is not an easy thing. But it is an awakening so that people can grow. And that's a problem. People aren't growing. You know, they're staying stale. And they expect these kids to stay stale. And it doesn't work. And it won't work.
It won't work, especially as we approach 2012. And this is a critical time of change. And people have the opportunity to make quantum leaps in growth and in learning and understanding. And the veil is thinning. And people have the opportunity to really gain all these new perceptions and all these new understandings. And it's exciting. So for those of us that are doing our work, no matter how painful it is, I think we're going to get a lot out of it, and certainly more and more as time passes.
Well, I think that's very true. You know, and I think people need to start getting themselves ready, because a lot of them are going to keep their head buried in the sand, which means it's going to leave their butt in the air, so it's going to get kicked pretty hard, okay?
Yeah.
You know, so they really need to start paying attention for themselves and for the rest of the world. Because we're all supposed to be together. We're all supposed to help each other. And somehow we forgot how to do this. You know, we forgot that word called love.
Right.
And we're living in a world where hate is more predominant.
Yeah.
And until that gets changed, we're in pretty bad shape, and we're going to stay in pretty bad shape.
A shaman said that Americans build a big fire and sit really far apart, and what we need to do is build a small fire and sit really close together, and that's going to be our ticket to survival. And
mm-hmm.
I thought that was a beautiful way to put it.
You know, it is. I mean, because with what I've seen, you know, and a lot of people go, oh, Nancy, it can't possibly be that bad. It's like, well, what you guys don't understand is that a lot of it's already started and you just haven't reached to the peak of it yet.
Right.
But as it starts to get closer to that peak, again, you know, like 2010, leading into 2012, there's going to be major, major, major changes. And if not, there's not going to be a lot of people that make it.
Right, and so for those of you listening, again, the message, and I received this from my master teacher last week, the message is to now prepare and build your immune system, your mental, emotional, spiritual immune system. Do not delay. And mental and emotional immune systems, you know, the healing work that you're talking about, Nancy, and the healing work that you assist people with is the key to a good immune system. You know, all the way around. So
mm-hmm.
That's just great.
You know, hopefully people will, hopefully they'll start to pay attention. But, you know, again, my focus really is on these kids because, you know, I'm looking at all the things that are coming, and I know that it's going to be these kids that put this world back together if it's to be put back together. And it just has to be put back together right. I mean, these kids come here full of love. They get hurt deeply. Their emotions run very deep because they don't understand why there's such a jagged energy on Earth, and it's jagged.
Right. Well, what I found works, too, is to remind children of home, because what happens is they get here and they start to lose the connection with their true home.
Mm-hmm.
And the more they're aware of that, and the more they're aware that they're here to do a job, the less we see the anger and the sense of abandonment, because you know, it turns into an excitement there. Oh, I'm here to do something important. Oh, okay, you know, and this isn't really my home. I'm here to do a job. That seems to free them up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen books that do that, and I've heard music that does that. Is there some way that you factor that into?
Oh, yeah, music is very, very important. You know, Bach, Beethoven, Mozart music are all great music to play for kids from the time you can they're conceived all the way through to adulthood, because those particular pieces of work are designed to turn the child or whoever's listening to them to a whole brain, not a right brain, not a left brain, a whole brain. And we aren't used to that concept of the whole brain, but that's what these kids have. And to hear music like that makes that whole brain stronger, and it makes them more balanced. And that music is very important. Autistic children love music. They may not be able to respond to anything else, but music is the key. The vibration from the, you know, the sound, just the energy that comes off really makes a difference for kids.
What do you see as the cause of the current rise in autism? Speaking of autism, what's your take on that?
I really have to agree that a lot of the the shots that they give kids today have a lot to do with their system not accepting it. Because, see, they're coming here very much protected. Their system is very protected, and then we throw some drugs in there that have a lot of synthetics in it, and their body can't accept it. And what happens is that their body starts to reject it, and when it does, it shuts them down. So these kids are basically, in my opinion, geniuses, but living in two points of a world. You know, one that they can only relate to through music, and the other one, it's like they can't relate at all, but, you know, they can. There's just that gap there. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the shots that are given to the kids, and again, the way that the kids are being fed.
Yeah, it goes back to diet too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, you know, and unfortunately, you know, like I said earlier, we live in this convenient world. Let's throw it into the microwave, let's go to McDonald's, let's, you know, fast this, fast that. And it's not what they need. They need to have really nice food, you know, homegrown food with all that preservative and poison in it that they put in it. You know, those kind of things. Before we run out of time, okay, I want you to give out the name of your book again, your website, and if there's an email address that somebody can contact you at, or a phone number if you like.
Oh, terrific. Yes. Again, it's The Thief of Sacred, and it's available on Amazon. And my website is thethiefofsacred.com, and my email address is jacquelinelloyd@aol.com. And I think there's also a link on the website if you want to write me directly. And, of course, I'd love to hear from you guys.
Okay. Now, on your website, Jacqueline, do you put down the schedules, like where you're going out and doing lectures and where you're doing the talks at?
I haven't yet, no.
Okay. You might want to do that, okay?
Okay.
That way people who are out there listening to us, they can kind of know where you're going to be and, you know, if they want a chance to see you or hear you.
Yeah, I've been doing the radio quite a bit, and, I do need to do that. This has all come about very suddenly for me, and so I'm still playing catch-up in a lot of ways. But I'm enjoying the heck out of it, let me tell you.
It's real important that you catch up. I mean, you know, when you said that you kind of went into hiding, I can understand that. I have never done that. My book, the What Do You Think book, I thought, well, let's see now. When I put this book out, I'm probably going to get in trouble for it, but I don't care. I don't care, you know. So they know how to reach me. All they got to do is tap into my phone lines, what they probably already have done. So if they want me, they can have me. But at least it's going to get out there so people can start to think. And the kids, they are our key. In fact, my logo, if people, when they get to see it, it has a comet of stars, like the tail is all stars. And then the ball of the comet, the picture of the little girl in there is my granddaughter when she was 4 years old.
Oh.
And on top of it, it's like an arch. On top of it says our hope. Underneath the arch, it says our future.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And then the title, Children, A Child's Miracle Mind, it comes right after that. And, I mean, that is a key. That is our biggest thing that we've got to get going, is to make sure that these kids are who they need to be and all they can be.
Absolutely. And one of the best ways to do that is to have the adults be mm-hmm. who they can be and be the best that they can be. So we do have a lot of work ahead of us, but I think it's you know, we have a lot of support, too, and people like you not afraid to talk about stuff and certainly inspiring to me. I just think, you know, we really do have a chance at this, and we just have to do the work.
We do, you know, and it's not going to come easy. I mean, we have lots of years of trying to catch up here, but I think we can do it. I think the more people open their hearts, open, you know, that heart part smart is what I call it, the better chance they're going to have to get everything done and rebalanced, including themselves. And then, of course, that will help the children to get themselves balanced and stay balanced.
Right.
You know, there's a lot to learn, you know, and the kids are here to teach us. We need to teach them, but we can't teach them if we're all out of whack and all out of balance. That doesn't work.
Exactly.
Jacqueline, one more time, please give out your information so people can get a hold of you.
Oh, thank you. The Thief of Sacred on Amazon, and thiefofsacred.com is my website. Thank you so much, Nancy. I so enjoyed this talk, and connecting with you is really, truly a blessing. Thank
you. It's going to be great. And when I get some other stuff going, I will get back in contact
with
you.
Oh, please
do. So we can, like, really, you know, get a lot of things going when it comes to kids, because I know you have great ideas just by listening to you. I get your energy, and it's good energy.
Excellent. I would love to collaborate or support or whatever, however that would look, I would be honored. That would be fantastic.
It would be great. Maybe you might want to be on my board.
Cool.
That would be good. Huh?
Okay.
All right, Jacqueline, it's been my pleasure talking with you, and I'm sure everybody really did enjoy, you know, what we had to talk about. Is there anything else you want to add before we go off air?
Know what's in your heart and do it, and enjoy your journey, because this is your life, and what are you waiting for?
That's it. What are you waiting for?
Yep.
That is the question.
Okay.
So, Jacqueline, thank you very much for the interview. It was very, very great, and I'm glad that we did get to connect, and we will connect some more.
Excellent. Thank you, Nancy.
You're very welcome. And I'd like to thank you, the listeners. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And by all means, check out Jacqueline's book. Go on her website. I went on it briefly before, you know, we talked today, and it was pretty good. So just check it out. Find out what she knows. Maybe it will help you with some of the things that you need to know. And I hope all you mothers out there had a great Mother's Day or are still having a great Mother's Day. And Jacqueline, happy Mother's Day to you, too, by the way.
Thank you. You too.
And again, may God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk later. Take care. Bye now.
This is Pete Seeger.